We welcome you to Feldis and Kale here at 103.9 1450 WKXL NHTalkRadio.com. Feldis and Kale is presented by Granite State Dairy Promotion and your local New Hampshire dairy farmers and Weed Family Automotive, located at 124 Store Street in Concord, online at WeedFamilyAutomotive.com, or you can call them for an appointment right now, 603-225-7988. Dan Feldis, how are you today?
I'm a lot better after watching that walk-off sacrifice fly last night. That was great for the Red Sox.
What a win it was for the Boston Red Sox. Oh, it was. It was. And a great series won by the Red Sox in four games. They didn't have to go back to Tampa Bay, which was probably a very good thing given the status of their pitching staff right now. But hopefully when the ALCS begins on Friday in either Houston or Chicago, that Nathan Eovaldi will be ready to go once again. But it was a terrific series, no doubt about that. Our guest today on Feldis and Kale is State Representative William Marsh, who has served for the last 5 years on the Health, Human Services, and Elderly Affairs Committee in the legislature. Mr. Marsh recently switched from the Republican Party to the Democrat Party over COVID issues and policies. And prior to serving in the House, he was a self-employed ophthalmologist based in Wolfboro. He has served as a trustee of Huggins Hospital for the last 17 years, the health officer of the town of Brookfield for 20 years, and the moderator of Brookfield for 12 years. Representative Marsh, we welcome you today to Feldis and Kale. Great to have you with us.
Well, thank you for asking me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Representative Dan Feldis is here. Thank you so much for jumping on, and thank you for all that you do serving at the State House. It's been an honor and a joy to serve with you over the years, and certainly I can say for listeners that Bill is somebody that elevates problem solving over the politics, and he and I have worked on a number of issues together. Can you review a bit for listeners what you've done in the New Hampshire House over the last 5 years?
Sure, Dan, and I've enjoyed working with you a great deal over the years as well. Mostly I've worked on health care bills. Many of them are involved with public health. And I found the most effective way to get things done is to work quietly behind the scenes to reach consensus. I passed a lot of bills that way. I think you and I first got to know each other back in 2018 when you helped me pass House Bill 1822, which permitted behind-the-counter access to hormonal contraceptives in New Hampshire.
Yep, yep.
We finally got the funding for that this year as part of House Bill 479.
That's great.
Yep. Then the next year, we passed House Bill 511, banning vaping in schools. I think that was very important for the children, and I think the parents would agree with that. 2020, House Bill 1623 was my bill. That was the bill that expanded telemedicine in New Hampshire just in time for the COVID pandemic. And I think that's been really important for a lot of our citizens. This last year, my most important bill was House Bill 79, strengthening the New Hampshire public health system by improving the partnership between state and local officials. Until recently, I managed to do most of these things without drawing an excessive amount of media attention. So this is an unusual place for me.
I guess so. And so I guess we can get to the question of the moment is, why did you leave the GOP? Why now? Why not before? And why not next year during an election cycle?
Well, it's been a slow burn. Last June, as you guys probably remember, I stood up on the House floor and led a fight against an amendment to Senate Bill 155, which would have prevented businesses from having policies to protect their patrons and employees from COVID. It's been an interesting summer since then because I was taken off Health and Human Services, and I've had time to think about what's really important to me. I've observed who takes the time to discuss issues with me and who doesn't. Politics is really a team sport. You have to work with other people. Most Republicans, and I use that word loosely, have made it painfully obvious that they don't want me on their team, or maybe more correctly, they have really no interest in what I have to say. So I could quietly shut up and go away. That would have been the easy choice. I apologize for my grandfather's block. We enjoy it. It keeps us going. It's been in my family for five generations. I hope it's not making too much noise for the radio show. I didn't think about that when I place myself.
No, not at all. Don't worry about it.
Not at all. How long I've been at this stuff. But anyway, they had this rally about a month ago, maybe a little bit more than that now, when the Republican leadership decided to come out in support of the DeSantis-style regulations prohibiting businesses from mandating vaccinations for employees, prohibiting schools from mandating masks, and prohibiting businesses from deciding to whom they'd offer their services. We can all see what's happening in states that have followed that path. People are getting sick, people are dying, including an increasingly high percentage of children. Republicans, as I understand the term, don't prohibit businesses from taking the actions they need to do to protect their patrons and employees. Businesses fail when they get subjected to that sort of rule. Going along with such a policy or just being complicit in my silence would have betrayed the confidence my patients and my constituents had put in me for years, and that's too high of a price to pay to stay in the GOP.
And, you know, look, I think obviously sort of different issues and different events have propelled this. What's the most glaring issue going forward for you? More specifically, what aspect of the Republican Party has changed so much that you can no longer reconcile being a member of the Republican Party?
Well, it's specifically in the New Hampshire House, and I think generally in the Republican Party around the state, the Freedom Caucus has become ascendant. And they seem to believe that they have the right to trample on everyone else's rights while they exercise their own. We both know that Part 1, Article 3 of the New Hampshire Constitution says that when you enter into a state of society, you surrender up some of your natural rights. In a civilized society, rights are limited when they start to impinge on the rights of others. We need to remember that. And if we're not remembering that, we're not going to be passing good legislation.
Well, you were recently quoted as saying regarding House leadership, and I do quote you here, it's a problem because competence seems to be a disqualification at this point in time. It's sad. Very sad. Could you elaborate on that? On this, Representative Marsh?
Well, that was said in the context of Representative Wyler's statements about the COVID vaccine. Mm-hmm. And I think that to be as detached from reality as he seemed to be, and he was removed from his leadership post, and making decisions as to whether New Hampshire will accept $27 million to distribute COVID vaccines in the middle of this pandemic when cases are peaking as they are right now is a real problem. But that's not the only example. I spent my time in Health and Human Services. And, you know, we can look at the membership of that committee and judge for ourselves which side has the competence. On the Republican side, we have a pastor as chair, a stock analyst as vice chair, a former legislative aide as a clerk, a real estate agent, two IT people, two full-time moms, a recently graduated nurse, an airline stewardess, and an engineer. On the Democratic side, we have an elder law attorney, two psychotherapists, two social workers, two physicians, an epidemiologist, an IT person, and a pharmacist. I think it's kind of self-evident which team has the competence to accurately judge what public health bills are good for the citizens of the state of New Hampshire.
Well, you know, you're not going to get a debate on that from me, Bill, but, you know, it's pretty well known that you are good friends with Senator Jeb Bradley. I'm friends with Senator Bradley as well, though we fight from time to time in a good-natured way. Did you talk to Senator Bradley before switching parties, and how did he react?
I did not talk to him before switching parties, but we've discussed many of the issues many times over the years. We both know that Republicans have questioned whether Jeb belongs in the Republican Party, too.
Yeah,
and that's
yeah.
another question for another day, and Jeb's going to have to make decisions for himself, I suspect, going forward. But before speaking on the amendment to Senate Bill 155, which really initiated this cascade of events, I talked to Jeb. And in his usual way of straddling the fence, he advised me to stand down and let him just fill the amendment in the Senate, but that if I felt like making a statement, it was a really good statement to make. That sounds like Jeb. He was away all summer, but he called me about 2 weeks ago, and he was not happy. Basically, his point was that I would no longer be in a position to rally the few moderate Republicans that may be left to block the 47-odd bills that are already filed to undermine public health in New Hampshire. And so that meant Jeb would have to deal with him in the Senate. Frankly, I'm a little disappointed Jeb signed that September 17th letter to our congressional delegation, which labeled vaccine mandates as ineffective and possibly counterproductive. We both grew up during the polio scare, and we both know that the mandate for polio vaccine has effectively eliminated the need for iron lungs. We've both seen how vaccine hesitancy has resulted in pertussis and rubeola, that's one of the forms of measles outbreak. We both know that smallpox would still be with us today, except for the vaccine mandate promulgated a century ago. We both know vaccine mandates are not an overreach, but were upheld in 1905 by the United States Supreme Court decision, Jacobson versus Massachusetts. Remember, in a civilized society, individual rights are limited when they start to impinge on the rights of others. Recently, Justice Amy Coney Barrett upheld that precedent and refused the appeal of Clausen versus Trustees of Indiana University to the Supreme Court.
Our guest today on Feltus and Kale is State Representative William Marsh. And Mr. Marsh, as many of you have probably heard, switched parties recently, going from the Republican side to the Democratic side. And Representative Marsh, let's discuss vaccine mandates a little more. The rules for President Biden's OSHA requirement for businesses with over 100 employees are yet to be written. So was it premature for Republicans to take a stand against them?
Thank you for that question. You know, vaccine mandates are really the crux of the matter here. And you're right that some of the rules are yet to be written. But people are opposed to the rules that are already in place for healthcare facilities. The Center for Medicaid and Medicare Services put in place rules on May 11th to block reimbursement, Medicare and Medicaid reimbursement of healthcare facilities, which did not implement COVID vaccination requirements. That includes such places as our county nursing home. And on June 10th, OSHA adopted emergency temporary standard to protect healthcare workers from contracting COVID. Basically, they're requiring N95 respirators to be provided when healthcare workers are at risk. I think that's a very reasonable requirement. So we have a pretty good idea of what the rules are going to look like. I know, Dan, that you and I both agree that our parents and grandparents in nursing homes ought to have all reasonable measures taken.
Absolutely.
To prevent them from a COVID outbreak that could kill them.
Yep.
And all workers are entitled to a safe workplace environment. It disturbs me greatly to see my former colleagues opposing such reasonable measures. As an example, here in Carroll County, our county commissioners are opposing vaccination requirements for nursing home employees. That not only puts the lives of the residents of Mountain View Nursing Home at risk, it also blocks Medicare and Medicaid reimbursement of the nursing home. Now, if we look at the Carroll County revenue budget, we can see that they have $6,700,000 in revenue budgeted for Medicare and Medicaid. Last year, the total raised from property taxes was $17,600,000. So, if we decline, if we don't put in place a COVID policy like CMS requires, we're going to lose all this Medicare and Medicaid revenue, and local taxpayers are going to have to make good the shortfall. It shocks me that three Republican commissioners would support raising everybody's county property taxes by 38%.
Well, certainly, Bill, your vocal advocacy in terms of vaccinations and in terms of how we treat our nursing homes has been one of the voices, silent voices, few voices on the Republican side. Now, obviously, you're a Democrat, but it's something I talked about, as you know, for a very long time since the outset of this outbreak and how we treat the nursing homes. We lost over 1,000 folks in our nursing homes, state-regulated nursing homes in New Hampshire. There wasn't routine testing of workers, employees, and residents or PPE. There's a lot that went wrong there, and not a lot of people stood up and said that. Bill did, and it's appreciated and made some impact. Now, I want to say this, too, the Lucky Change Party. Obviously, you're in the public eye. There's a lot of attention, as you mentioned, and has your party change to Democrat have anything to do with the way other Republicans have treated you since then, maybe even their public behavior and what that reflects on you?
Well, I'm going to answer that question, Dan, but let me answer, respond to what you said first before that. You know, this COVID-19 is a new thing, and we're kind of making this up as we go along because we haven't had to deal with this before. We're bound to have made some mistakes. It's unfortunate that some people died in the nursing homes with some of the outbreaks, but we were learning as we went along how it spread and how important vaccinations and masks were in preventing that spread. So all of those deaths are unfortunate. We'd rather not have any deaths, but it was kind of inevitable that some of them were going to happen. And I do appreciate your standing up for our nursing home residents in the last several months. Regarding the party, you know, I don't respond well to peer pressure. I never have. More likely to make me angry than to make me concede.
Me too.
And
I agree.
And so while this behavior you speak of has not made me happy, I'm pretty good at ignoring it and moving on. On the other hand, when you sign into a caucus call and a substantial amount of time is spent discussing whether you should even be allowed in, any reasonable person would conclude that you no longer belong there. So that kind of led me to my conclusion, and that's why I am where I am now.
You mentioned in your press release that, and I quote here, I feel the local Carroll County Republicans and Winnipesaukee Republicans have been taken over by extremists who see no place for moderates like me in the Republican Party, end quote. Could you elaborate on that a little bit?
Sure. In the last week, I've just become aware of an effort to evict former Representative Frank McCarthy from the leadership of the Carroll County Republicans, apparently for not being extreme enough. Now, you know, we can judge for ourselves whether we think that that's an appropriate thing to have done, but certainly he's worked in that group for a very long time. Many Republicans in recent years have stated that they want to force the rhinos, and by that they mean the moderates. Some of us would argue that some of the far-right people are really Republicans in name only. So they want to force these people out of the party. At the last meeting that I attended of the Carroll County Republicans, people railed against this recent New Hampshire budget for not being extreme enough and were encouraging people to not vote for it for that reason. We've both heard all the talk claiming that Governor Sununu, who I do respect greatly, is not really a Republican. I hope the voters will listen to what's going on in these meetings and decide for themselves who is really being the extremist here.
And, Bill, I know we're going to have to take a break, and hopefully you can hang with us during the break and come and stay on the line. But I want to talk about the voters real quick. You know, there are voters that go to the election. They will vote invariably straight ticket Republican or invariably straight ticket Democrat. And so the ones that went in 2020 and voted straight ticket Republican and voted for you simply because you had an R behind your name, do you think those voters may feel, I guess, betrayed or whatever? And, you know, they voted for the Republican. You got a lot of Democrat votes too, by the way, but they voted for the Republican and now they have someone who's a Democrat representing them. How would you respond to that voter who's a straight ticket Republican voter?
Well, you know, you're going to be an uphill battle in the next election. I live in a very Republican district, and you're right that an awful lot of people do vote straight ticket. And in some ways, that's a sad thing. I think that's less true when people know you personally.
Right. Yep.
Unfortunately, my district doesn't include the town of Wolfboro, where probably more people know me personally, but that's life. We deal with what we have to deal with. But I did practice up here for 30 years as a physician, so. You know, a lot of people know me, and they know what I've stood for a long time. Are they going to feel betrayed? I don't know. I haven't gotten very many emails that way or any phone calls. I do hope COVID goes away and we can stop fighting about how to handle it. But I'm afraid it's going to be with us for a while, and we might be living with it for years. Both immunized people and people who've recovered seem to be susceptible to reinfection after about 6 months, so it's likely to be with us.
Our guest is Representative William Marsh, and he switched, if you're just joining us, he recently switched from the Republican Party to the Democrat Party. We'll have more with Representative Marsh coming up. Feldes and Kale on 103.9 1450 WKXL NH Talk Radio, proudly presented by Granite State Dairy Promotion and your local New Hampshire Dairy Farmers, as well as Weed Family Automotive, 124 Store Street in Concord. 1039 1450 WKXL, NHTalkRadio.com. It's Feltus and Kale, presented by Granite State Dairy Promotion and your local New Hampshire Dairy Farmers, and Weed Family Automotive, 124 Store Street in Concord. Online at WeedFamilyAutomotive.com. You can call them as well at 603-225-7988. Our guest today is State Representative William Marsh. And Representative Marsh has recently made the move from the Republican Party to the Democrat side. And Representative Marsh, do you think we've talked about a number of issues during the first portion of this show? Do you believe that those issues in your mind will dissipate going forward, or might they become worse?
Well, it could go either way. We don't really know what's going to happen with COVID. I'd love it to go away. But we may get another variant like the Delta variant that spreads even more easily. I think that what we really need to do is use all the tools at our disposal to keep COVID under control. Likely that's going to mean periodic vaccinations like booster shots, improved ventilation in our building, and mandating masks in indoor spaces when the transmission's high. So we're just going to have to be careful and hope we can keep this under control, keep our kids in school, and keep our economy open.
And Bill, changing from Republican to Democrat, there are some issues that people feel so strongly about that it can propel a party switch in part. What has propelled your party switch in part. But will your party affiliation, new party affiliation, change your future votes? Will it change your public opinion on any specific issue?
Well, let me answer that, Dan. But I want to finish what we were saying just before the break. We were talking about the voters and whether voters might feel betrayed by what I did. I practiced medicine in Wolfboro for 30 years before I ever ran for the House. And I believe most of my former patients who are now my constituents trust my judgment on these medical issues.
Yep.
So they know, they really know me. They know I'm no different today than I was last month. And they know I'm going to do my best to do what's best for them. And there are some things that they know I'm never going to vote for just because they've known me for years and they know I've never been a yes man. That's going to continue to be the case as a Democrat, just as it was always the case as a Republican. As far as changing parties is concerned, well, it hasn't changed my opinions on issues particularly.
Yep.
Although we all reevaluate things as we learn more information, and our public opinions might change when we have new evidence. We both know that the parties put pressure on you to vote certain ways, and on issues where we really don't care that much or we don't have a lot of knowledge, we can't help but be influenced. But there are times, you've got to pick your battles because you can only fight so many of them. But I believe I've loved my conscience, and I'll continue to vote my conscience more than most reps. And I would foresee that continuing going forward. Who knows? Maybe I'll influence how the Democratic Party goes.
Yeah, yep. And you mentioned in your press release, talked Ken quoted for your press release earlier. I will quote now, and I quote, "I was a physician." That's Bill speaking, not me. I was a lawyer. There's a joke in there somewhere. You know?
it's hard to be both, although I do know some people who've done both.
You're using that in the past tense, Dan? You were a lawyer?
Right. Still am.
Yeah, most people who are both lawyers and physicians are really dangerous for physicians.
A double-edged sword there, yeah.
There you go. Well, Bill, getting back to the press release, I was a physician long before I became a representative. Doctors live by the principle, first do no harm. I cannot in good conscience support this selfish refusal to take reasonable precautions, unquote. What are the necessary precautions, and why have they become so political?
Well, for COVID, reasonable precautions are vaccination, effective masks, especially indoors where COVID spreads more easily, improved ventilation, and social distancing. If we don't use all these tools at our disposal, each one that we don't use increases our risk of being forced into another economic shutdown, and each one risks our kids being forced into remote education. using reasonable precautions is a small price to pay to avoid those things. It makes absolutely no sense to me that this would become political, and it makes absolutely no sense to me that we would pass laws to prohibit us from using any one of those tools that we're probably going to need going forward.
Well, absolutely. And look, you and I have been outspoken on the issue of vaccines and the issue of with respect to this argument from the Attorney General and unfortunately, Governor Sununu, too, that somehow individual rights and liberties usurp or trump, using the word Trump, public health. And there is no legal support for that literally at all. I mean, you've cited Jacobson case versus Massachusetts 1905 case in terms of smallpox vaccine. And there's just literally no support for this notion that you have an individual right to harm public health. And that it's become political makes not a lot of sense to me. But I mean, let's get in a little bit more into your decision-making process in terms of what you'd like to share with listeners and constituents. Is there anything we haven't talked about in terms of your decision-making process to change parties from Republican to Democrat that you'd like to share with listeners and constituents?
I think people need to realize that I thought a very long time before doing this. And it's only with the greatest reluctance that I switched parties. You know, your party's a piece of your identity. It's like, which church do you go to or what ethnic group you're in? You know, it's been you for so long. It's
right.
A really, really hard thing to change. And people do not change parties very often. I do remember two legislators that changed from Democrat to Republican my first term. Somehow they didn't create this huge fuss that this has suddenly created. So I tie myself on the news and I'm dealing with it. My children laugh that I'm not going to fit in as a Democrat either. they really find that dreadfully amusing. But I'm just unwilling to follow quietly on a path that I believe would put my friends, neighbors, and children at risk. And at the end of the day, I can look at myself in the mirror. I can say that I did what I believed in the best interest of my patients and constituents. And, you know, I'm not sure that it's so much my deciding to have left the Republican Party, that's my recognition that the Republican Party has left me. And I think a lot of voters may actually feel that way.
Did you ever think about quitting, or couldn't you afford to give up the large salary that you accrue as a member of the House?
$100 a year in mileage. There you go. Well, I really enjoy this. It's a nice way to give back to society. It's a nice way to stay involved in retirement. I was young to retire, and there were circumstances that came up behind my malpractice insurance that caused me to retire a little earlier than I might otherwise. So I really enjoy what I do. But, you know, I may have to move on and do something else. We'll see what the next election holds. I hope I can continue to stay involved because I think I've done some good for the state of New Hampshire.
Well, certainly you have, Bill. And I think for folks who are listening have heard what I knew, which is you're an incredibly thoughtful person and legislator, and you're aiming at common sense solutions to protect public health and to help society and to serve in a positive way in public service. And so a lot of those listeners who have just heard all that are probably wondering, what are you going to do in 2022?
Well, they're not the only ones that are wondering. My family's wondering. I'm wondering. I really have no idea what I'm going to do in 2022. I have not enjoyed this last year, as much as I enjoyed the previous four. We've got to see what redistricting holds. My wife would be very happy if I didn't run and we had more time to travel and do things like that. But I may very well run again. I really haven't reached a decision on that, Dan, and I suspect I will sometime before next spring.
Well, Representative Marsh, we certainly appreciate the time you've spent with us today here on Feltus and Kale, and hope to chat with you again down the road.
Well, thank you for having me. It's been a real pleasure.
Thank you so much, Bill. Take good care.
You take care, too. Yep, bye-bye.
Representative William Marsh from the Wolfboro area in Brookfield, and made the move, switched from the Republican Party to the Democrat side. And, you know, it's a move, Dan, that, you know, does take, even on this level, does take quite a bit of courage.
Oh, absolutely. No doubt about it. I mean, look, you're in the public eye and you've affiliated with a party. You've had that affiliation, as Bill said, to some degree, for some people more than others, but to some degree, nevertheless, for everybody, it is part of your identity to some extent. For some people, it's a bigger part of their identity. And I think the folks that are serving that it's a bigger part of their identity tend to then end up putting party over people and party over problem solving. And I think that's a problem. But Bill certainly is the type of legislator and person that is focused on common sense problem solving, is focused on public health. And like you said, you know, first oath of doctors is do no harm. And, you know, what's going on, Ken, within the Republican Party, including on vaccines, including, you know, suing. You can argue about the vaccine plan from President Biden, but saying there's an individual right to usurp public health, and then placating to some extent these anti-vax extremists, it's highly problematic for the Republican Party, and you're seeing the results of it, including people switching parties.
Yeah, and probably there's a good chance that that more of it will happen in the future. Some may go the other way as well. Some may go, and we've seen that happen as well, going from the Democratic Party to the Republican side. So,
Senator Bradley, who we mentioned briefly earlier, he once was a Democrat.
Yeah.
And he switched to being a Republican, I think, right around the year 2000 or so. But, you know, look, I think it is... takes a lot of courage to do what Bill did. Bill's doing what he think is the right thing to do. And I think that is the kind of thing that people, I think should respect. And you know, and certainly folks who may be critical of it in the Republican Party, I think are looking at it strictly from party numbers perspective rather than what is the right thing to do. And rather than sitting back and saying, you know what, we lost one of our best members, and why did that happen? Mm-hmm. And engage in a little introspection and say, all right, well, maybe these weird letters we're signing on to attacking vaccines, and maybe these weird rallies, maybe these aren't the things that we should be doing, attacking the vaccine, attacking public health measures. Maybe we should rethink this. That should be the reaction, not a knee-jerk attack on Bill.
You know, and I don't agree necessarily with the vaccine mandates that are out there. I believe in the vaccination. Well, you know, I've had three shots now.
Yeah, your booster?
I did get the Pfizer booster just the other day. So I've had three. In fact, I got two shots in one day, the Pfizer booster and a pneumonia shot as well, the pneumonia vaccine. So yeah, I've been you know, very I'm full of vaccine right now, Dan. I'm full of it. So yeah. So I believe in the vaccine, and but I also believe that people should you know, have the choice of whether to get it or not. I don't think it should be a mandate.
Yeah, and I think what President Biden's again, the rules are not out, but right. President Biden's vaccine plan, well, that's why I call it a plan, is for employers with 100 or more employees. Those employees either get vaccinated or do a weekly test. Now, I teach this fall at UNH School of Law. I do a weekly test. It's just, you know, you do the swab, you put it in there. If you don't want to get vaccinated, what's the problem with doing a weekly test? I don't get that. I mean, that's what President Biden's plan is, and that makes good sense, I think. So, and it allows that choice. If people, you know, want to make a choice not to get vaccinated, I think it's a responsibility of everybody to get vaccinated if they can. Mm-hmm. If there's medical reasons they can't or religious reasons, obviously those are exceptions. However, but if they can get vaccinated, if they choose not to get vaccinated, doing a weekly test, Ken, Come on, that's not that big of a deal.
Yeah, I had to do. I did some work for UNH in Durham last year, and I had to, and I came in contact with very few people while I was out there. There were, you know, no people. I was doing some public address announcing at their hockey games, and there were no spectators in the stands and very few personnel. And I didn't come in contact with too many people, but they mandated a test every week before you could perform your duties.
Right.
So,
right.
Yeah. I mean, so,
and you know, at UNH School of Law, where I teach this fall, I've provided the evidence of my Moderna vaccination, but I also do a weekly test.
Yeah.
And so this basic rule, again, we don't have the rules that are coming out. We know what it's going to say, the gist of it, which is employers of 100 or more employees, the employees either get vaccinated or they do a weekly test. That is not burdensome at all. And that's just good common public health and public health sense. And you know, this is not, a lot of people have argued, epidemiologists and public health experts, that the approach that was taken during polio and smallpox of mandatory nationwide vaccinations should have been taken here. That's not even close to what President Biden has proposed. Not even close, right? So I think, take a step back, think about the bigger picture, and there are so many variants that are emerging. The variants are going to continue to emerge if people don't get vaccinated. And so that's why I'm saying, like, if you can't get vaccinated, there's not a medical or religious or whatever reason for you to not get vaccinated, please get vaccinated. Please wear masks indoors in public places. And please, if you can't get vaccinated, do some testing on a weekly basis. That's all that really that Biden vaccine plan lays out. And that's not just good for public health. That's good for our economy.
That's Dan Feldes. I'm Ken Kale. It's Feldes and Kale on 103.9, 1450 WKXL, NHTalkRadio.com. We are presented by Granite State Dairy Promotion and your local New Hampshire dairy farmers and Weed Family Automotive, located at 124 Storrs Street in Concord. Online at WeedFamilyAutomotive.com. You can call them as well at 603-225-7988. We'll take a break right here. Feldes and Kale, 103.9, 1450 WKXL. 103.9, 1450 WKXL, NHTalkRadio.com. Feldes and Kale, proudly presented by Granite State Dairy Promotion and your local New Hampshire dairy farmers and Weed Family Automotive, 124 Storrs Street in Concord. Online at WeedFamilyAutomotive.com. This today from WMUR. .com from political reporter John DeStaso, that former Ambassador Nikki Haley today will be endorsing former U.S. State Department official Matt Maurer for New Hampshire's first congressional district seat. Her first endorsement of the 2022 election cycle in a competitive U.S. House primary. And that's not, you know, that's news, of course. But I want to ask you, Dan Feldes, as someone who has run for a high office in this state, how important are endorsements? Do people pay much attention to them? I mean, what value do they have to a candidate?
I think it really depends on the race. You know, I think when I first ran in 2014 for state senate, I was certainly not the establishment candidate, having endorsements of folks that are serving and, that have gone out and said, you know what? I know Dan, he's a legal aid lawyer. He's doing good work managing the housing justice projects, you know, advocating at the state house, including for extending unemployment insurance to part-time workers, which eventually became a lifeline to market basket workers who were in that labor strike.
Right.
And familiar with Dan and kind of putting themselves out there to say, you know what, I'm getting behind this legal aid lawyer, this unknown legal aid lawyer, unknown in the political space anyways, legal aid lawyer from the south end of Concord, that added credibility, right? So people who were thinking about it were like, you know, there are people who have served for a period of time that are supporting Dan and that lends credibility. I think it also can have the benefit in some of these bigger races. I mean, bigger races means Congress or statewide race, state right, Senate or governor, have the benefit of, you know, signaling and sometimes unlocking additional support, including financial support. And however, the grassroots are going to respond differently depending on who the endorsement is. And sometimes an endorsement could backfire with the grassroots depending on who's doing the endorsement.
Yeah.
And other times it could propel it, and some other times it could be by and large on balance neutral. So I think for the most part, it lends credibility depending on the circumstances. It also helps with, you know, campaigns are a snowball effect. You know, it helps with snowballing support, including financial support. I think in this context for that congressional race, obviously Matt Maurer was the nominee last time. And so I think probably what this does to some degree, maybe, is help with even more of the fundraising that's going on in that district, maybe. But I don't know all the details of everything that's going on in that primary, so it's hard to really say what the impact of that is.
But it's certainly a hotly contested Republican field here.
No doubt.
Six people already, and who knows, there could be more enter the fray, although six is very crowded as it is. And we're still, though, a year away, and we'll find out what takes place in that hotly contested first congressional district race. We will have to take one more break here on Feltus and Kale, then be back to wrap things up, proudly presented by Granite State Dairy Promotion and your local New Hampshire dairy farmers and Weed Family Automotive, 124 Store Street in Concord. You can give them a call, make an appointment right now. Bobby and Charlie standing by, 603-225-7988. Welcome back. Feltus and Kale, 1039 1450 WKXL, NHTalkRadio.com, presented by Granite State Dairy Promotion and your local New Hampshire dairy farmers and Weed Family Automotive at 124 Store Street in Concord. Well, Dan Feltus, WKXL, is your home for Boston Celtics basketball all season long. And the Celtics will tip off next week, next Wednesday, the 20th, against the New York Knickerbockers. So there you go. And all
Ken
the games
cannot,
right here.
Ken cannot wait to watch Marcus Smart.
Right. I actually went to a Celtics exhibition game over the weekend, and they won. They won their exhibition game against the Toronto Raptors on Saturday night. Now, when you go into enter the Boston or the TD Garden now, they check your vaccination record. You have to bring your vaccination record with you, and you also have to be masked when you're sitting in the stands, unless you are actively eating or drinking. So unless you're, you know, sipping on a Coke or a beer or eating a hot dog or chips or whatever it may be, or popcorn, you must be masked up. And they enforce it, by the way, pretty strictly. So the ushers are checking to see if everybody is masked and so on. So that's what you have to do in these days of COVID at the TD Garden.
Yeah, well, it makes sense. It makes sense. And it also makes sense that you're allowed to take your mask off when you're eating a hot dog or French fries.
It does. It would make it very difficult if you did not. Yeah. But it's probably helped their concessions. That's my guess. It helps their concessions because a lot of people don't want to sit there with a mask on.
So they'll eat the whole time.
So they're going to be eating popcorn or hot dogs or drinking beer or soda all the time. That'll wrap it up for another edition of Feltus and Kale. Thanks to our guest, Representative William Marsh. The program is proudly presented by Granite State Dairy Promotion and your local New Hampshire dairy farmers. And Weed Family Automotive, they are located at 124 Store Street in Concord. Thanks for being with us. Join us next time.